2 Romeo India Whiskey. Let me try something. Okay, that sounds like the best way to go. At this time, we begin the technical net. And the main purpose of the technical net is for ham radio operators, primarily in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, to educate each other. We help each other find out how all this wireless hardware and how our radios and transmitters and antennas and receivers and transmission lines and propagation, how all that stuff works. We teach each other that. There's a lot of brain power in that area. And we quite often get some help from people outside of the area, like the guys in E3 land and KF7 land and so on, by way of internet connections of IRLP and Echo Link. Let me drop. A person signs into the technical net by giving John, KC2WGB, Dick, K2LIW, and Hal, K6DPZ. You give us your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. You need not check in just to say you're listening. After 31 and a half years, we believe somebody is listening. This is TechNet number 1495 of the series of TechNets that began roughly September of 1982, way back in the dark ages. Way back in those days, me and Hip, N2FDJ, we thought we'd answer a couple of questions from people, we'd dry up and go away. And we suddenly realized, let me drop. We suddenly realized there's a real thirst for knowledge about ham radio subjects, and there's always new guys entering the field. Ham radio, by the way, as far as the FCC's licensing is concerned, is up to an all-time high. Something like 710,000 amateurs have licenses in the United States at this time. Never a bigger number. Tremendous number of those guys have got extra class licenses. So if you think ham radio is losing out to computers and a whole lot of and video games and a whole lot of other things, there are people who from time to time develop a pessimistic opinion. How are we going to attract new people to ham radio? It is happening. And so it's just a matter of looking in the right place at the right time. John, I wonder if Joe, W2BMP, has an announcement tonight. And by the way, there will be a very nice flea market this coming Sunday at Levittown Hall, probably starting at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. And lots of guys will be gathering and transferring all kinds of hardware. So, John, do we have any announcement tonight? KT2WGB, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Not at this time, Dick. Good evening. It's been a quiet evening. Back to you, sir.
Whiskey 2, Bravo Mike Papa.
There he is. Hey, Joe. You got to have a message. And give us some more words about the flea market next week and your classes. W2BMP, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Thank you, Dick. John, I'm sorry. I just got home from work. I didn't have a chance to speak with you. We did very, very, very well in our tech class. We had 100% passing rate. The BE session was last Saturday. And I just wanted to remind everybody that the general class starts on March 3rd. And if you're interested in taking that class, please email me, whiskey2bravomikepapa@limark.org. Thanks very much, John. Dick, thanks again for your time.
Very fine, Joe. Joe, I wonder if you have any further information that we should be transferring at this time as to the flea market next Sunday. Over to you, Joe.
Dick, I'm just with education, so I'm not the expert on the ham fest. But I think it's next Sunday, and there's also a VE session there as well. And that's kind of all I know, other than I should show up at 8 o'clock in the morning and help with tables. That's what I was told.
You will be involved with that VE session next Sunday, Joe?
That's correct, sir. There is a VE session next Sunday.
Okay. So at this time, we're going to take check-ins for people who do have a question or a comment for the net. Give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes at this time. K2LIW to be listening.
DPZ is in for the quickie answers.
Hal recognized. Anyone left now to check in, give me your call letters and name, with the word yes.
And two. And two extra in, and that's a thousand. One is, I believe it could qualify for the first hour, which is the dipole antenna versus displacement current. I've got an indication from John that you were able to see the video, or I'm just mixing up a little banana. So the second one is for the space report, I believe Paul was able to view that material as well. I wonder if you, Dick, had a chance to go over.
I did see the video with reference to the cyclotron, a number of my emails have not been received over the last 2 weeks, and there's an error in my system that has to be corrected. Okay, so anyone who has a question or a comment for the net, West recognized. Anyone else, give me your call letters and name right now. K2LA, if you're listening. Hey, John, did we finally answer all the questions and therefore we can dry up and go away? You guys got that. There's no football game going on now. What is it? What's attracting everybody? Such a nice warm day. They were out doing all kinds of things and they're tired. I spent the last few hours on the roof of my house clearing out the gutters. So, anyone with a question or a comment for the net, give me your call letters right now. K2LIW. My goodness, that's a first. I don't think this ever happened. In which case, maybe we'll be going over to the mailbag a hell of a lot sooner. Hope you got some good responses there, John. One last call. Anyone with a question or a comment for the TechNet, give me your call letters right now. K2LIW.
KD2FQU. Name's Don. Questions about mobile rig?
Foxtrot Quebec Uniform. John, recognized. Alrighty. We got a real chicken also, besides Wes. Another call? Anyone who wants to check in to the TechNet because they do have a question or a comment, give me your call letters and name right now. Maybe we're going to have a slow start tonight. Hey, John, you're number one on the runway. Take your time, and you're going to get the more thorough answer if you want it. Or if you want the real brief answer, you just tell Hal that you want the brief answer. You've got it, John. Kilo Delta 2, Foxtrot Quebec Uniform, K2LIW.
This is my first time actually making contact. I just got my technician license a couple of weeks ago. I actually wanted to know what would be a good mobile rig. I was looking into a Yaesu 7900R, and my Elmer was telling me a good antenna maker is a Larson, but I'm just looking for a 2 meter and 440.
Now the guy I know who handles the most amount of equipment in any one short period of time is Hal. So Hal, do you have some suggestions as to what he should consider first for a dual band 2 meter 440 rig and a dual band antenna? Maybe Larson. K6DPZ, K2LIW, go ahead, Hal.
Okay, first of all, are you going to be using this base station, are you going to be using mobile, because you have mentioned how you're going to be using this dual band rig, so on a fast break, can you give me that answer?
He did say mobile, Al, he definitely said mobile.
Okay, if it's going to be mobile, first of all, I would say if he wants to permanently mount an antenna on the car and not use a mag mount, a 19-inch spike antenna in the center of the car would give him both VHF and UHF simultaneously, and it's a non-expensive antenna. The way it works is on VHF, it's quarter wave, and on UHF, it's three-quarter wave. And it does a very good job, it's not a big expense, and it's not very obvious if you mount it on the car. It's not like a large antenna with a base loading coil and everything else that can be seen too easily and walk away too easily. As far as rigs go, dual band rigs, there are so many competitive rigs out there. I would suggest looking into ham radio outlets or ACS. They're all competitively priced, and they're not that expensive. Don't buy a used rig off eBay, because if somebody gets rid of a rig off eBay, 9 times out of 10 it may have a problem, and you're just getting into the field. And if you buy a new rig, you can get it to the ATBRL insurance, and it's the best way to go. The difference in money spending between a used and a new rig is not that much. That's maybe, hey Dick, K2RIW, check that, K6DB.
Hal, at the beginning of his question, John also said he is considering the 7900R. Do you, would you like to tell him some of the service history, repair history, ease of use? Have any opinions on the 7900R that he's considering? Over to you, Hal, K2RIW.
Well, I've repaired quite a few 7900Rs, and they have a situation where if you keep very high levels of power near them, they'll take up the pass the diode, and they can also blow out the front end transistor. It's a competitively priced radio, and I would put it in the classification of all the other ones out there. It's not bad, but get the ATBRL insurance on it when you get it.
Good, yeah, thank you, Hal. Hal and I occasionally have slight differences of opinion, John. You're going to get the benefit of both approaches. Hal, I believe, prefers a really well-installed quarter-wave mount spike antenna, 19 inches long, permanently installed on the vehicle, in the middle of the vehicle where you get the most circular pattern. I'm a strong enthusiast of mag mounts. And what I like about a mag mount is that if I park the automobile in an area where I don't want to announce the fact that there's a radio inside and therefore break the window and steal the radio, the nice thing about the mag mount is you can easily remove it and therefore the radio, the car looks like an ordinary car. There are people who believe that a mag mount has lower performance. I'm not one of those people. I'm fairly sure a mag mount, properly installed, properly designed, can have full performance of a well-installed antenna. Not everyone's going to agree with that. There are guys out there who think that a well-installed antenna does a little bit better than a mag mount. I'm not one of those. When it comes to the rigs themselves, I happen to be enthusiasts of used equipment. Every single thing I've owned, I don't think I've ever bought anything brand new. Yeah, I pride myself. Let me drop. I pride myself on being able to do troubleshooting and repair, and with people like Hal and Andy, the W2CDL, who you'll see next Sunday, if you go to the Levittown Hall and go to the Hammerammer, the Limark get together this coming Sunday, up on the stage on the rear left hand side, you'll see Andy, the W2CDL, who has for probably 20 years run the tune-up clinic. In other words, you bring any rig that you buy, build, own, or whatever to Andy. He hooks it up to the power supplies, to his service monitor, to his spectrum analyzer, to his Berg wattmeter. He can tell you how many watts is coming out of it, whether or not it's got the right deviation, does it have the right amount of private line PL tone installed. He can tell you anything about the rig, and he also can repair things. So with a combination of Hal, Andy, and a few other guys, it is my opinion you can't go wrong buying a used piece of equipment, which in many cases you can save one-third of the pay one-third of the dollars. My philosophy of life is that if a used piece of equipment even has an ugly front panel, it's dented because it's been thrown down a flight of stairs. What's inside, no one single component, with rare exception, is very expensive. Once in a blue moon, there is a very exotic integrated circuit in there, and Hal can tell you some horror stories about one of those, which is very hard to replace. That's a relatively rare situation. And throwing it down the flight of stairs usually won't damage that. So I like used equipment, oldies but goodies. I mean, the nice thing about an older piece of equipment, let me drop. An older piece of equipment usually has established a track record. Like the rig you're listening to right now is a old-fashioned Kenwood TS711A. I think the thing was probably invented way back in 1985. And it's got a built power supply. It can be used mobile or fixed, a little bit on the bulky side compared to modern day rigs. Only has 35 memories, does have to tunable IF, has a lot of features I like. An extremely stable frequency synthesizer, very good sounding audio by my standards and so on. And a equal rig today, this is a 2-meter all mode, the Kenwood TS711, sideband and FM, only on 2 meters, but very good track record from my point of view. What else is going to say about it? Completely variable power output on the front panel. You twist a particular knob, it'll go from 1 to 30 watts of output. And when it comes to feeding other pieces of equipment, like if you're ever going to go up to a 1296 or a 2304 or 10 gigs, where you usually set up a tunable IF plus transverter, then this rig is ideal for that application. Brand new piece of equipment that has the same characteristics, you'll pay $1,900. A TS711A in medium good condition, $200 to $300. So it pays your money, it takes your choice. And there's a lot to choose from. I know what you're going through, John. You open up the back of QST magazine, you look up those ads, you'll see so darn many of them. How to choose one is not easy. By way of word of mouth, checking with your friends, each person will have a recommendation. I just gave you a recommendation. Not everyone's going to agree with me. As I said, it's an oldie but goodie. But I love that particular piece of equipment. Overall, I've bought three of them over my lifetime. Over to you, John, and you're allowed to ask as many more questions as you want. Kilo Delta 2, Foxtrot Quebec Uniform.
Repeater, timeout.
Voice. As you can see, I just signed up in a shoe.
Radio. TS711A is only a VHF multimode radio.
Yeah, I did tell you that. It's 2 meters only. But it's also sideband as well as FM. And one of the things you may discover, John, is that FM has by far the highest popularity. But when you do tune down to 144-200 and listen to the sideband people, and if you're willing to put, let's say, a Yagi on a 2-meter Yagi on the chimney of the house, there's another whole class of people that transmit nothing but sideband to each other. And these are the more serious experimenters with much, much greater range. Those guys will talk to each other over a 300-mile range day in and day out without the use of a repeater. So even on the 2-meter band, there's two entirely different classes of ham radio operators. And congratulations on getting your license, brand new hobby. And one of the things you're going to hear that you won't believe at first, there's 26 different kinds of ham radio. 2-meter FM repeater ham radio is only one of the 26. And if it doesn't please you, make sure you try one of the other 25. Bunch of opinions there, John. Kilo Delta 2, Foxtrot Quebec Uniform, K2LIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick. Okay, I heard something like DMQ, very low audio, and with a comment. We're going to go back to John first, and I'm going to pick up the comment. Go ahead, John. You might want some fills on some of the things you just heard. You got it, John.
I appreciate that, Nick. I'm actually right now driving, so I got to be careful. And I have a Yaesu's VX 5-meter from 5 pots right now. I really appreciate that update for which equipment, and I think a max mount might be better. And I saw a 19-inch large speaker, 440. That would be a good place within range. And I will look around for 2-meter and 440 rig from over here in the car.
I pressed the wrong button. We missed some of what you said. You're going through a slightly noisy area at this time, John, but I can tell you are looking for a dual-mode 2-meter 440 rig, and there are people who really like 440 as well as 2 meters. Right, a person with a comment, it sounds like DMQ, Delta Mike Quebec. Please give us your full call and your name, and then proceed with your comment, sir. And make the audio a little louder if you could. DMQ, question mark, K2LIW on the TechNet. The person who signed in a little early, who said he had a comment. I may have the call letters wrong. Person with a comment, go right ahead. Yeah, a little sorry to hear that we didn't pick up him soon enough before he disappeared. Okay, John, did I miss somebody in the process? KC2WGB, from your point of view, KQLIW?
No, I don't think so, Dick. I think everything is covered.
Okay, so the subject on the floor right now is that John, 82FQU, is about to buy a 2-meter, 440 dual-band mobile rig. Anybody within the sound of my voice that has a dual-mode mobile 2-meter, 440 FM rig that you like, hate, direct information, indirect information, give us your testimonials. Anybody who is using a dual-mode, a dual-band mobile FM radio at this time, would like to tell us what it is and how well they like it, give me a call at us right now. KQLIW in the TechNet.
KC2ZUM, with a comment.
KC2YDT.
Okay, we got ZUM and YDT. And while we're at it, let's see if there's anybody else has a comment on 2-meter, 440 FM mobile rigs. Give me a call at us right now if you would like to tell us what you like and don't like about any particular brand name.
And to ASS.
ASS recognized. Okay, we've got more than enough. Hey, John, looks like you're going to get quite a few testimonials tonight. Mr. ZUM, what's your favorite rig? How long have you used it? And has it ever given you any hiccups? KC2ZUM, KQLIW in the TechNet.
Yes, good evening. Thank you. KC2ZUM here, coming in through Echolink. I have two radios that I can mention, sticking directly to the topic here. There's the Kenwood TM-V71A, which is a dual-band radio. It's very good. It's Echolink ready as well. And I have two of them, one in the mobile and one that I use in the base. Very good radio. Never had any problems with it. And the other that I would recommend is the Elenco DR 635, which is also a dual band FM radio, works very well, and it's the Elenco is very solid. It's built like a Motorola. I say that because I also have Motorolas in my arsenal here. But those are the two that I would recommend, which are very good. The Elenco is very easy to program, very user friendly, probably a little more than the Kenwood, but they are both good radios. And again, the good selling point about the Kenwood TMB71A is that it's Echolink ready, and it also, and both radios will let you do cross-banding. Back to you, KC2VUM.
Very fine, Alan. By way of Echolink from Fishkill, New York. Let's see, Fishkill's got to be a good number of miles from me. It looks like it's 58 miles, not quite as much as I thought it was. 58 miles from me, which is close to that number of miles from the repeater. Okay, you really like that Elenco, and glad to hear that, Alan. Matt, KC2YDT, what's your favorite rig? And by the way, why are you telling us your favorite? If you happen to know of one that should be avoided because it's got bugs in it, give us that information too. KC2YDT, KQLIW, go ahead, Matt.
Okay, very good. Well, I have a few dual band radios. First one I'll mention is the Yaesu 7900, and that's a nice one. It has the dual band. It's very user friendly. However, it is only have one up at a time. You can't monitor both 2 meter or 70 centimeter at the same time. The other one I have is a Yaesu 8800. That is dual band, dual receive, which is nice, two different S meters. And again, it's very user friendly. 7900, let me let it drop. 7900 is nice due to the fact that it has, you know, the keys are lit up. The 8800, the keys are not lit up, so that can be a factor. However, the dual band do receive, and it does have the cross band repeat, which is a very nice feature if you're using it as a base radio. So those are the two I recommend. They're both, they have the detachable head. You know, the body is fairly small, so you could keep the actual transceiver in, you know, underneath the seat and just have the head sewn wherever you want, which is a nice feature. K2RIW, K2RDT.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Real nice information with real personal experience to it. I almost would prefer a rig that it can only listen to one frequency at a time. Some of the rigs that can listen to two bands simultaneously, from my point of view, are quite a bit more difficult to program. Periodically, creates a little bit of confusion. But if you're one of these guys that just likes complications, you're a computer scientist, and having a rig that'll do dual band reception, cross band repeat, and things like that, which I think the 8800 can do, sounds awful nice. From your point of view, here we go, Matt, because you've owned both, give me a rough price if you happen to know, brand new and or used if you happen to know. If either of those rigs were bought used, make a guess as to what they might sell for, Matt. KC2YDT, K2IW, the tech man.
Okay, the 7900 runs around, roughly 300, get it used and new for that price if you shop on eBay. You get some very good discounts that way. All my radios I got new, by the way. I got them on eBay, however. The 8800 I got for around 400. The only follow-up question comment I have on all that tech is, if you are doing any e-com work, the dual band, dual receive is a very nice feature and comes in handy a lot.
Now, you got to go slow with me, Matt. In some respects, I'm a dinosaur. You're going to have to give me a couple of words on e-com. I presume by that you mean electronic communication, digital type modes, packet or whatever. Give me a few words on what you mean by e-com, all of which I haven't used, so I'm in the dark ages. KC2YDT, bring me up to speed, Matt. K2RIW.
KC2YDT returning. By e-com, I mean amateur radio emergency service, or RACI, radio amateur civil emergency service. Any public service amateur work, it's a very nice feature to have the dual band dual receive. During Sandy, the 8800 came in handy tremendously because of that. I could have the one net going on one side and then another emergency net going on the other side. So it worked tremendously well for that. K2RIW, KC2YDT.
KF2HW. KF2HW recognized. There's one person ahead of you, N2ASS. Matt, before we leave you, will either of those rigs, 7900 or the 8800 Yaesu, will they tune outside of the amateur radio bands? Like you, for instance, are involved in advanced EMT with critical care and whatever, and so therefore there are probably 440 frequencies and 150 meg frequencies that you like to listen to for the emergency services you're involved in. Will either of those rigs listen out of band, to your knowledge, Matt, with or without modification? KC2YDT, K2LAW, the tech man.
Yeah, both of them are easily modified, and they could, listen and transmit on you know, outside of band. For the Mars cap look that I do, military amateur radio service and civil air patrol work that I do, it works very well with that. But, however, unless it's a Mars event, that is illegal to transmit on them. You need commercial radio strictly for that, which I also have in my arsenal.
Good information, Matt. Thank you. All right, we got Greg and Mike in that order. Greg, N2ASS, what's your favorite rig? And tell us how much you like it and what you don't like. N2ASS, KQRIW in the TechNet.
I'll have to make mine kind of quick since I just reached the home location. It's Greg, N2Alpha Sierra Sierra. I'm using the 8800 now. And what's great about that dual receive is, like when we had the hacker, I would sit there and listen on the input on one side while talking on the other. So if I got close to him at any point, I knew about it without having to hit this. There's a little DM button you can hit to go back and forth very easily. You can scroll back and forth. But to make it even easier, you just program it on the other side of the radio. It's like two completely different radios. So that was fantastic. Now the 7800 is a nice radio. It doesn't have crossband repeat. But all the buttons are very well lit, so you could use them in your car without going nuts. Now, the 8800, the buttons are not lit, just the face is lit. So you have to go by feel and memory where these buttons are and what they're going to do. Where the 7800, they're all well lit, very convenient. I had an ICOM. I didn't like the potato head mic. I just couldn't get used to holding that thing in my hand. I like the Yaesu mic. It's easy. It does all the repeater functions, you know, if you wanted to do IRLP with the touchstones, like most of them do. They also have an 8900, which has four bands in it, so you'll get 6 meters, 2 meters, 440, and 10 meters. And you might want to consider that, the exact same phase as the 8800 with all the same functions. So that one's kind of nice. Now, the 8800 does receive into 900, 800. It does the 4.2 meter. I could do aircraft. If I could listen to the weather channel, it goes almost down to your FM radio bands, like your regular broadcast bands. So it was. I do like this radio. I had both, and it was a hard decision which one to put in the car, and I went with the 8800. As far as the pricing, you could find a used 8800 definitely for $250, because I look all the time. In fact, there's one on Craigslist right now for $250. And you could get the 7900 for a little bit less, 225, 200, if you look around. And that's all the input I had, and I got to get running into the house. And I hope that helps you possibly make a decision. That dual receive is fantastic, fantastic feature.
Sorry to keep you waiting so long, Greg. Boy, am I glad to hear. You did wait, though. Lots of good information. Thanks an awful lot. Good stuff. Well done, Greg. All right, the next person who signed in, I may have gotten the call letters wrong. Kilo Foxtrot 2 Hotel Whiskey is what it sounded like. If so, that's you, Mike. Over to you, KF2HW, question mark, K2RIW in the TechNet.
No, it was Kilo Foxtrot 2 X-Ray Whiskey. Name is Russ, and I just wanted to say, the one important thing, if you're putting it in a mobile, the Yaesus, if you're going to mount the head remotely, the microphone plugs right into the head, which is nice. The ICOMs and the Kenwoods, you have to run a separate mic cable extension from wherever you mount the radio and bring the mic up into the front with you. So that's just another, matters to me. I drive all the time, and I'm on the road all the time, and that's just a nice thing. I'm talking on a 7900 right now, and like I said, the mic on the Yaesus plugs right into the head. KF2XW.
AC2ZHI comment. ZHI comment. We'll put you up in the middle. Very fine, Russ. So you found a way around the non-lit microphone on the 7900 by plugging in another mic. Do I have that correct, Russ? And I think you're saying they're thoroughly compatible. KF2 X-Ray Whiskey, K2RIW.
No, that's not exactly what I meant. A lot of these new radios, you can mount the radio in the back, and the head you can mount on your dashboard. the microphone plugs right into the head on a Yaesu, where the other radios, ICOM and Ken, would you have to run, the microphone plugs into the body of the radio, so you have to buy a microphone extension cable to run the mic up into your driving area.
Thank you for that clarification, Russ. Okay. Sounds like you like the remote rig in the trunk or in the back of the vehicle with the control head up front. And that, of course, those control heads are usually a hell of a lot easier to mount than the hold-on rig. So there's more possibilities as to how to incorporate it into the passenger compartment. Next person I signed in with some information was ZHI, if I get it correctly, Zebra Hotel India. Give me your full call and name, sir. HRIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Yeah, good evening, affirmative. Name here is J. Julie Yankee, call sign Kilowatt Charlie 2 Zulu Hotel India, KC2ZHI. Just wanted to comment on the radios as the owner of a 7900 and three 8900s. Definitely highly recommend them. Good workhorse radios, nice for multiple bands, the 8900 for some of the crossband features and stuff like that. I have two set up in my work car and my personal car. One at home and one in my office, and definitely good workhorse radios. As was mentioned, the mic does plug directly into the control head, so that's a nice feature. The only thing you do have to run then is an external speaker. Otherwise, the speaker itself will be wherever the brain for the radio is mounted, either in the back or under the seat. So that's the only thing you have to remember when you do it. But it's a standard phone cable and then just a 8-inch external speaker or something like that. KC2ZHI.
Yeah, that brings up a very good point. In the case of an automobile where you've got quite a bit of excess noise from time to time, unless your car is one of these super modern ones with absolutely perfect soundproofing, the loudspeakers that are contained in many radios are okay, but if you plug in an external loudspeaker, one with a slightly larger size into a slightly larger cabinet of itself, and then Velcro that to the instrument panel, the top of the dashboard is what I do, you get a hell of a lot better sound, more of it, more easily listened to as you're driving with a mobile. That's just my preference. There's a zillion brand names of external plug-in loudspeakers that you can add. And the ones built into the rigs, in some cases, are quite tinny, not enough bass, not enough volume, and so on. And let's see, I guess some people could even go the next step with stereo. There's probably a way of getting stereo audio on one of these dual mode rigs. You could really have a grand old time. Anyone else with any further comments for John's benefit? John KD2FQU is considering buying a 7900R. Other people have been recommending the 8800. If you've got a testimonial about your favorite mobile dual band 2 meter 440 FM rig, you've got an opinion about which ones you own, which ones you really like, give me your call letters right now. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yay.
You're at Foxtrot Hotel.
KC2VUM with one more comment, if I may.
Okay, we got BBA, Foxtrot Hotel, and ZUM in that order. BBA, give me the full call and your name, and go ahead with your comments, sir. K2LIW in the TechNet.
First of all, name is Ray, Romeo Alpha Yankee. Full call is Whiskey 2, Delta Echo Alpha. And I'm a user of the 8800, and I love this radio. Got a bunch of features, just as good as the 8900, with the exception of 6 meter and 10 meters. Not much really going on around the local area for 6 meters. And there's like maybe one or two 10-meter frequencies that are working in FM. So, I mean, that might be your deciding factor right there between the 8900 and the 8800. The 8800 does a lot of this wide band receive, as you know. And personal preference, I prefer this one over the 8900.
Very fine, Ray. Ray, did you give me your call as Whiskey 2 Delta Foxtrot Alpha? Did I copy that down wrong? Ray, go ahead.
Roger, it's Delta Echo Alpha, Drug Enforcement Agency. Hi, hi.
Very nice call. Okay. So that's what you use in Brooklyn. Very fine there. Great. Thank you. Next person who signed in was, I think it was Echo Hotel. Didn't get the full call. Echo Hotel. Please give me your full call and name. K2LIW in the TechNet.
This is Whiskey Alpha 1 Sierra Foxtrot Hotel, name Douglas, mobile in Trumbull, Connecticut. How copy?
From Trumbull, Connecticut, we're hearing you very well. Tell me your name one more time, sir.
This is Douglas. My QBH here is typically in Milford, but I'm mobile tonight. And great question for the evening, and I'm happy to share my experience. My perspective is one of how intuitive is radio to you from the user's perspective. And I agree with the Allegiant VR system. Very easy to use, at least to input frequencies manually. It really leads up that way. But the way the program memories are laid out is very backward. And it doesn't make any sense. When it comes to the 8800, great radio, no question about it. But the ones I use, and maybe it's changed, I don't know, is that VFOA has 512 memories, VFOB has 512 memories, but neither talk to each other. So unlike the Kenwood, where you've got 1,000 memories or so, then you plug all your computers into them, what have frequencies into, and then pull from either VFO. The older 8800s that again, they have proved it, those two don't talk to each other and are going to have to program each VFO separately. Back to that WA1FM.
Very fine, Douglas. Thank you for all that information. And even though you were reasonably far away up there in Connecticut, you were coming from reasonably little bit of noise. And thank you for that information. Alan was next, KC2ZUM. What additional information would you like to give us, Alan? K2LAW in the TechNet. Sorry to keep you waiting.
Oh, not a problem. No problem at all. KP2VUM. Yeah, I wanted to mention a couple of other good points on the Malenko and the Kenwood TMB-71.
We'll have to wait till he comes back and have him reinitiate. You'll see why.
Yes, I am.
Now you sound good. Unfortunately, that previous transmission, it went into that distorted mode where we didn't get anything. So please repeat. You got it, Alan. KQLIW of the TechNet.
Okay, I apologize. I was probably too close to the mic there. I'm running this mic through a mixer. Yeah, I was saying that the good selling points of the TMV-71 and the Elenco 635 is they have great audio to the speaker. There are some radios where you can't do that. You know, you have to roll up the windows, turn off the air and everything else, and hopefully you'll hear something. But they're good audio to the speaker. Another good point about it is that if you get the separation kit, you can install the radio in the rear, in the trunk, or under the seat or whatever. And in some cases, you can use Cat 5 cable to connect the control head or run the audio. And I have a modular mic jack that I use up front, and I just plug in the mic separately from the control head. One bad point about the Elenco is that high power for long lengths of time, it does tend to run very hot. And one other point that I wanted to mention is that they're very easy to program, whether you do it in the field manually or if you purchase the software. Back to you, Dick. KC2ZUM.
Very fine, Alan. 100% good solid copy that time. Thank you for all that information. That Elenco that runs hot in the high power mode, I'm guessing a person could put a fan on its heat sink, and that would give you partial correction, although establishing a fan on a mobile rig inside of an automobile does probably represent a bit of a mechanical difficulty. Got an opinion on that one, Alan? KC2ZUM, K2LIW in the second hand.
KC2ZUM. The Elenco does have a fan in there that comes on whenever you key up. But it just still tends to run hot, which I found even in the, obviously in the crossband repeat mode. So I usually run them at low power when I do the crossband. An additional fan, yes, you could do that. A little bigger and mounted somewhere on there, and it would probably cool down a little better. The Kenwood has a fan also, which kicks on when you transmit, but that doesn't really get too hot. So, but they're still they're pretty good rigs, and I've had them now for about going on 4 years, and have had no complaints. The positive thing, like I said, with the Elenco is that there's no, you're not set to the factory timer on crossband. With the TMV-71, you are. They did that from the factory on purpose because it sometimes may be a stuck carrier, or they feel that the radio might burn up if it runs for long periods of time. Back to you.
Some more of that good information, Alan. When you say the Elenco runs hot in the high power mode and you transmit for a long period of time, do you mean it runs hot to the touch and you feel uncomfortable to proceed? Does it go into an over-temperature mode where it turns off its transmitter or jumps down to a lower power mode to light up a warning on the front panel? Well, what was your decision point to know that it was running hot? Yeah, your hand can tell you it's hot, but there are some pieces of equipment with silicon transistors, for instance, where they can tolerate junction temperatures of 150 degrees centigrade. And a human being can just barely lightly touch something at 70 degrees centigrade. So what's hot to a human being and what's hot to a well-designed silicon circuit could be fairly different. So what do you believe happens when it gets hot, if anything, Alan? KC2ZUM, K2LAW in the tech band.
Well, the thing with the Elenco, it's kind of like aluminum. The whole enclosure is aluminum, so the heat is basically moving around the whole case. You can touch it. You can touch that when it gets hot, unlike when you when a Motorola heats up, and that's that's a different thing altogether. What I have noticed sometimes when it gets very hot, it will run unstable. The transmitter might cut off. or it'll just be unstable, and you'll notice that right away, because usually the person that you're having a conversation with would tell you. But additional cooling helps that, and it's good to, you know, maybe not run it at the full 50 watts for long periods of time. All my equipment is rack mounted, and I have additional cooling facilities in there, so that kind of helps. But everything is in 19-inch racks. If that answers the question, back to you, Dick.
Yeah, once again, Alan, Don, good information, and thank you.
Huh.
So heat does create a problem, an instability, when you push it too far. Many an amateur will be using a rig that has a high power mode of 50 watts and maybe a low power mode of 25 watts. Mentally, you'll say to yourself, 25 watts is half the power of 50. Boy, I must be really weak. Well, radio has got some peculiar characteristics, just like your hearing system. You go from 50 watts down to 25 watts, it's only a 3 decibel difference. Half of one S unit. So unless you're at the outer fringe of the repeater you're talking to, half power 3 dB down is almost no sacrifice at all. So don't be confused by the fact that it's a 2-to-1 power ratio. It's only a 3 decibel difference, which is half of one S unit on a well-calibrated S meter. So therefore, the 25 watts, I suspect, would be adequate for where the average guy drives. 95% of the area where he drives, the 25 watts would do it very well. There was another person who wanted to make a comment. Who was that? Give me your call letters. K2RIW in the tech net. Okay. This has been very educational for me. We've got to do this more often. Choose an area. Now, this was dual mode mobile FM radios, 2 meters and 440. Who are your favorites? What do you like? What do you dislike? And so on. We've got to do the same thing in the future, John, with fixed station rigs, with all mode rigs, and so on. Because lots and lots of opinions out there. And we don't worry about recommending and not recommending certain brand names. This is we're not in the selling business here at the TechNet, so to speak. So we call a spade a spade. The next person who signed in was Wes. But Wes, let me give you a warning. At this portion of the TechNet, is your question and or comment a pure ham radio question? I know that Wes is quite a scientist. He's involved in many other areas. So later on, in the later hours of the TechNet, we get into the science area. But do you have a pure ham radio question? N2XJN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
N2XJN. Well, it's up to you to judge it. I believe it's precise in the ham radio field, which is about the antennas and displacement current. So, that is also referring to ham radio operator. I don't know his call sign, but he's a scientist, and he's actually sending about a dipole antenna and displacement current. That's what I would like to discuss. If we go a little bit more complicated, then we can finish up in the last hour. And so,
yeah, if you go to Bernie's Dropbox, and Bernie is Hunt Family, Bernie at huntfamily.org. And there you'll find Bernie's Dropbox, K2 Yankee Oscar.
Tom Dick.
Okay, so it's Tom. So it's a Bernie at huntfamily.com is the Dropbox. There you'll find an article by K2RIW about dipole. And the reason that that article was written is that I'm firmly convinced the way we teach the most basic of all real antenna theory is teaching about a dipole. If you look at the number of the antennas that are in the world, I say there's close to 5,000 antennas. Let me drop. And of those 5,000 antennas, a high percentage of them have a basic radiating element within the antenna that is a dipole, or half a dipole, which is a monopole. So that monopole could really be a quarter wave ground plane, 5/8 wave ground plane. It could be the probe that's inside of a waveguide to coax adapter. A dipole could be part of a dipole that is inside of a Yagi antenna, inside of a large periodic, and so on. Lots and lots of antennas have a full dipole or a half dipole inside of them. Therefore, to really teach how a dipole works is, in my opinion, very valuable information. From my point of view, the schools do an extremely poor job of doing that. Most of the books do a very poor job. Occasionally, a book will show you a diagram of what the magnetic fields or E-fields look like, sometimes even with animations around the antenna. Although that may be truthful information, it is not, in my opinion, useful engineering information. You go to the school that teaches you Maxwell's equations, and you'd like to believe there's a way you can stare at the Maxwell's equations. You suddenly get an aha, an excitement, and now all of a sudden you know how a dipole works. Absolutely not. Let me drop. And the best way I can prove that every one of us is a victim of a very poor educational process is that a man from a major organization that shall remain nameless came before me a couple of years ago. He's a man who runs the antenna division of a company that's got two separate plants with multiple anechoic chambers and multiple engineers in each of those anechoic chambers. So here's a guy who is the head of the department. He worked his way up through the ranks, and he has, at one time, I think he had 12 antenna engineers answering to him. So this particular man came before me. I gave him my favorite antenna puzzle, my favorite dipole puzzle. And the puzzle was a 72-ohm twin lead transmission line, 72-ohm balanced transmitter, goes into a fully resonant half-wave dipole that has 72-ohm impedance. So everything's perfectly matched. Twin lead, 72-ohm transmission line. There's not going to be any standing wave ratio. The signal's going to go down the transmission line once and never come back. And so the question I asked him was, you're studying the operation of this dipole. The very next cycle coming out of the transmitter is made out of red electrons. And you're watching that one single cycle go down the transmission line on the slow motion movie. And whether you consider that very next cycle a voltage waveform, a current waveform, certain number of joules of energy, use any units you want. The very next cycle of energy goes down that transmission line, hits the dipole, and I asked him, what happens next? Believe it or not, that's an extremely important question. If you're going to understand a dipole, in theory you should be able to answer that. His answer to me was, why the hell would I want to know that? And my answer was because the vast majority of all the antennas consist of a dipole as a basic element. Therefore, you and all of your engineers want to know how the dipole works.
Repeater, timeout.
Therefore, you and all of your 12 engineers who work for you want to know how the dipole works, because it's where the rubber meets the road. It is the foundation of all the antennas your guys are building and designing and modifying. And therefore, by way of understanding what happens next, drastically improve your ability to anticipate various environments where the antenna has to be squeezed into. I mean, modern-day handheld equipment, cell phones, and transmitters, and handy-talkies, and whatever, you're quite often squeezing antennas into very small, very undesirable environments. Therefore, understanding the basic theory of operation of a dipole is very important. When I explained that to him, he says, I'll get back to you. Okay? I waited a couple of weeks after he went back to his factory. He didn't get back to me. I repeated the question to him as an email. The silence was deafening. At first I thought, this is very foolish. I suddenly realized he is also a victim, as I was a victim. How a dipole works is very different than you would think. And what really happens, the magic of all this, is that the energy going down the transmission line, hitting the dipole, let me drop. You would like to believe, because the dipole is a radiator, you'd like to believe the energy goes down the transmission line, hits the dipole, and then jumps into space and gets radiated. That's what you want to believe. Absolutely not. Turns out radiation is hard. You have to kick that signal in the tail 20 times in a row before it finally leaves that antenna. All that energy you launch into the dipole travels down the whole length of the dipole, hits the open circuit ends. Only 2.5% of it gets radiated on the first half pass. It reflects off the end and comes back toward the beginning. Another 2.5% gets radiated. On the first full cycle of bouncing signal on the dipole, 5% of the energy is radiated.